Welcome to the Property Management Mastermind Show with your host, Brad Larson. Brad owns one of the fastest growing property management companies in San Antonio, Texas. This podcast is for property managers by property managers. You'll hear from industry leading professionals on best practices, new ideas, success stories, and lessons learned. This is your opportunity to learn about the latest industry buzz surrounding property management, as well as tips and strategies to improve your business. Now here's your host, Brad Larson.
Hello everyone, this is Brad Larson, host of the Property Management Mastermind Podcast. To see a complete list of the offers and discounts we have worked to provide, visit our website at propertymanagementmastermind.com. In there, you will find additional discounts from Tenant Turner, Citizen Home Solutions, PMW Websites, and several others. Also, be sure to check out our Seminar and Conferences tab, where we highlight different conferences going around the country, business and property management related. Lastly, be sure to seek out the Facebook group we have started and become a member. In that group, the PM community at large, to include vendors, are welcome to join. Hello, everyone. We wanted to offer you a brief introduction to our newest product on the PropertyManagementMastermind.com site. It's called the Business Development Toolkit. In 2017, RentWorks organically grew by over 360 plus homes. In 2018, we are on pace to grow another 500 homes. All of this has been without any acquisitions by going out to meet the people and earn the business one at a time. This toolkit will provide you all the marketing materials, business development scripts, and follow-up plans in a format you can modify and use. The biggest part of this toolkit is we give you the Lead Simple follow-up plan. Now, using Lead Simple as your contact resource management platform, combined with implementing our follow-up plan, will give you a launching pad to build your business. This was over 2 years in the making, pulling bits and pieces from the best companies in the industry. It comes with a 100% money-back guarantee if you are not completely satisfied with this product. Check out our site at propertymanagementmastermind.com to learn more about this new business development toolkit. Hey everyone, thanks for joining us. This is Brad Larson, your host. Want to give you a quick introduction. So Christina Roach will be joining me today in studio, and we have a really good conversation circling around all kinds of different things around the industry. And she's a regional vice president for NARPM in addition to what she's doing in a management company on Western Washington. Great introduction, great interview with Christina, and I think that she's going to be a really good action-packed episode because there's lots we talk about. It's not specifically focused on one area or anything in particular, but we do have some great conversation that will pick up a few things for you. Have a listen. And welcome everybody to another edition of the Property Management Mastermind Show. I'm your host, Brad Larson, and today's guest, I have Christina Roach, and I am super excited to have her on. She's on her Southern tour right now, which means she's doing a bunch of NARPM speeches at Austin, Dallas, Houston, San Antonio. I'm probably forgetting a couple others, but it seems like you're down here for quite a bit, a couple of weeks, kind of doing the Texas tour. And I'm so glad to have you here in studio to have a conversation about property management. So Christina, how are you today?
I am wonderful today. Thank you so much for having me on the show. I'm super excited. It's my very first podcast, so hopefully I do okay.
You'll be a natural. So tell me what you did this morning.
This morning I was at the San Antonio chapter. And I did a class for them called Communication. Basically, it's a communication boot camp where we talk about different tips where you can implement things to help ease the communication with your owners, with your tenants, with your vendors. The premise of basically everything is managing expectations and education. Educating your owners, your tenants, your vendors about what to expect, how the processes go. A big thing that I repeat in all my classes is people don't know what they don't know. Mm-hmm. You know, your owners don't know how you do your business unless you tell them, unless you explain to them that this is what I'm going to be doing. Any more than I could walk into my dentist's office and presume that I knew what they did, you know, their processes. Nobody's going to be able to walk into yours and assume what you do. So we talk a lot about managing expectations and making sure that your communication is effective. I particularly love the San Antonio chapter because it was the first one that invited me down to teach. So whenever I get an opportunity to come, I do. It's usually every 2 years. This year, Austin and Houston also joined up with San Antonio. So I'm here this week. And then next week I leave to go and do Dallas and Fort Worth. And it'll be my first time at those two chapters. So I'm super excited. So it truly is the Texas teaching tour that takes 2 weeks. They always ask me, when do you want to come? They're like, do you want to come in November? I'm like, no, I want to come in July. They're like, are you sure? Why? I'm like, because I like the heat. They're like, but it's really hot. I'm like, I know. I'm from Washington State. Mm-hmm. I see the sun for 3 days a year. I want to come and soak up all the warmth and take it home with me so that I have it for a few months.
Yeah, we're touching hundreds all week, so it's going to be a rough month. But before we get too far going, tell us more about your background and the management company you have up in Washington State.
Well, I came into property management probably in a way that's different than anybody else. I'm supposed to be teaching your kids how to speak Spanish. That's what I went to school for. But that wasn't going to happen. And so I started a cleaning company, and I was cleaning houses on base because we live in a Navy town. And then I got asked to go out in town and clean houses for a property management company. So I ran the company that did the houses for this lady for probably 4 years. She had decided she wanted to sell her company and asked me to come work for her in the office. And so in 2006, I did that. Started in September, and then probably March of the following year, I got my real estate license, which mm-hmm. I needed. And then I bought her company from her in July. And then 2 years later, I bought another book of business, another portfolio from another local company. In 2015, I started an in-house maintenance company called Athena Property Services. And then last year, I bought another property management company in a county south of where we live. So it's been an interesting, it's been 12 years. Yesterday actually was my 12-year anniversary of signing Congrats. Paperwork on the first company. So that was cool. So it's been an interesting, dozen years doing something that I never thought I would be doing, but I seem to be pretty good at it and I enjoy it. And I love being able to put people in houses and find, you know, find affordable housing. That's always kind of been my goal, is to try to find affordable housing for people on fixed incomes, because I really believe and always have that everybody needs a place to live. Mm-hmm. And so especially now where we see these like crazy markets for rent and the rent rates across the country went up, I think like 5 or 6% in the last few years. They've gone up like 11 to 13% in Western Washington. So trying to keep people in their houses is really important to me. So trying to keep some rents affordable when I can is part of my passion. So it keeps us busy. That's for sure. It.
Yeah. A couple of things. You and I drew up an outline of stuff we want to talk about, but you just touched on something that I think that the audience would really be interested in hearing, is about the acquisition side. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of folks are looking at the growth. That's why they're listening to podcasts. How can I grow? What do I got to do to grow? And acquiring companies is a great way to grow. Mm-hmm. I mean, clearly, you can do it kitchen tables, you can do it acquisitions, you can do both. Mm-hmm. I would say recommend to everybody to do both if you can, especially on the acquisition side. So a couple of questions that would pop into my head. First thing I'd say is, like, how did you stumble upon those acquisitions? I mean, did they just approach you and say, hey, we like you, we want you to buy our company?
Well, the first one I was working for her, so that one was easy. The second one was actually a fellow NARPA member in my area, and we'd had a discussion one day at a meeting, and he was like, oh, I'm so done. You know, I don't want to do this anymore. And I was joking, and I was like, well, if you ever want to sell it, let me know. I had no interest in actually buying it or no idea what I was going to do if he said yes. But then 6 months later, 6 or 8 months later, he came to me and he was like, hey, are you really interested in buying it? And I kind of thought about it and probably should have thought about it more. But, you know, I said, yeah, let's go ahead and let's do it. And so that one was, he came to me because I kind of made a joke about it.
You did something that a lot of people don't do. It's called ASK, ask.
True.
You asked, mm-hmm. hey man, you know, in a roundabout joking manner, mm-hmm. if you're ever interested in selling, come see me.
Yeah.
And if you don't mention even something like that in passing at a bar or just in a function or wherever, mm-hmm. No one's going to know that you want that. So that right there is networking. That was marketing.
Yeah.
So it's not as routine as, well, I sent out 10,000 postcards and I got one guy to reply. You know what I mean? It's not as routine like that. And that's what we tend to forget sometimes as managers or business owners, because we're not networking enough for those other opportunities. It's good to kind of run out there once in a while and say, hey, if you're interested, I'm selling or I'm buying and whatever you're going to do, whatever angle you're taking. So that was the first one, mm-hmm. right? And so the second one, how did that kind of fall in your lap?
The second one, it was almost kind of the same thing. She was another NARPA member and she had been on a committee that I had chaired. And so I knew of her and, you know, I knew her a little bit. And she had contacted me a few years ago. She had there was something she wanted to kind of bounce off of me and pick my brain about. And so we had a conversation over a few months about something she was trying to change. And then she was like, you know, I'm on my way out, you know, in a few years. And again, because I apparently just say things sometimes, I was like, well, if you're thinking, you know, when it comes to that time, let me know. Because I knew already that I was trying to move into a different area, into a different county. Mm-hmm. So when she decided that, you know, she was ready to do it, I was the person that she called.
Very cool. And how long does that process take typically for you? Because there's a lot of people that talk about, oh, you got to do due diligence. You got to go to an attorney. You got to do this, that, and the other. Kind of talk us through that process so people would know what to expect.
Well, I would most definitely not recommend doing it the way that I did.
See, lessons learned. I love it.
All. For anybody who's going to our national convention in San Diego, I'm actually doing a breakout on how to poorly purchase a property management company. That's the title. Because if there was anything that could have gone wrong, it has. I mean, absolutely do your due diligence and talk to, there's so many NARPA members who have done an amazing job at creating a process for acquisitions that works every single time. They have a checklist of everything that you should do before you buy a company and do those things. You know what I mean? Make sure, for me, I will tell you probably the top couple of things you absolutely need to know. One, make sure that their books are straight and square because hers were not. And so I'm dealing with that here a year later. So make sure that everything lines up, that the trust accounts are reconciled properly, that all the accounting is done. And if you don't know how to do it or you're not capable of figuring that out, hire somebody else to do it for sure. That's the number one thing that you need to do. Number two, and the thing that I wouldn't have even thought of because she was a NARPA member and she'd been running a company for like 10 years. Make sure that there's no active investigations from the Department of Licensing in your state.
Oh, good idea.
You know, and I wouldn't have thought of that. I wouldn't have thought to call the Department of Licensing and say, hey, does this person have any active investigations against them? Well, she did. So that was something that I got to find out when I got the call from the investigator from the Department of Licensing, because now I own her company.
Sure. So some residual problems might be yours.
Let's just say that they're falling squarely on her lap and just kind of to the side of mine. Okay. Another thing too is make sure that how they do business is how you do business. So we are almost exclusively paperless in my office. She was almost exclusively paper in her office and kept everything, like from 1997, everything. Like as long as she'd been doing real estate, she had every single piece of paper, every fax like sheet that shows you sent a fax, all of that was kept. So. Wow. It was literally going through boxes and boxes and boxes of paper to figure out what we needed and what we could get rid of. But it took forever to even do that. Hmm. So it's something simple. You know, do you have the time? And maybe you do. Maybe you work it into your your price. You're negotiating. You know what? I'm going to have to spend a month going through your paper to be able to make any sense of this. And maybe you can knock some money off of, you know, the negotiation because of that. But just make sure that it's something you look at, because I didn't.
So after doing three acquisitions, I caught that. Mm-hmm. After you've done three successfully, like signed the check and acquired them fully, mm-hmm. are you still into that mode or do you like more the organic growth? I mean, now that you've seen both sides, I mean, obviously you've grown organically just from being around and mm-hmm. word of mouth, referrals, et cetera. Do you like that growth model more or do you like the acquisition growth model more?
I'm kind of split. Like you would think that, you know, this last one having gone so poorly, I'd be like, I am never buying any portfolios, any companies again. But I still kind of like that. I like the, oh, look, here's 100 new properties. You know what I mean? And we have them all at once. And, you know, here's 100 new ways that I can help people. And that kind of, that's really exciting to me still. Organic growth, I love as well, because that's my favorite part of my job is the kitchen table, is the mm-hmm. having the conversation and, you know, helping people out and being of service. So I would say that for me, I'm kind of split. I like both equally.
That's an interesting take because you get a lot of people that are focused on organic growth like us. You know, we have not done any acquisitions yet because they just really haven't appeared. We've had a couple of teasings, but they were not even worth, you know, looking at because they're so small. The other side of that is I would kind of stumble through an acquisition, to be honest with you. I'd like to know or think that I could, you know, just do my due diligence and be really careful. You think that in your head, you're like, oh, I can handle this, right? But then you get into it and it was like, whoa, there's a lot of stuff I don't know. And I would be very anxious to hear that presentation you have going on the NARPM National event, just because it's going to be lessons learned. And there's no better way to learn in this business is than to listen to what mistakes people have made. And that'll be quite fascinating. I'm excited to hear that. So one of the things we wanted to touch on going along the same lines of acquisitions is I wanted to give everybody kind of the update on the NARPM accounting practice mm-hmm. standard. And so there's... actually the outline in front of you, the accounting standard outline that you and I have reviewed and we put together and we're putting this out. So to give everybody the update, what we're doing is we're creating a standard, kind of like a GAAP standard. GAAP is the generally accepted accounting principles, practices, whatever P you want to use for the accounting world. And so they all have to adhere to those, the GAAP standard. So what we needed or have started to create is something that we're going to dub the NAP standard, the NARPM accepted accounting practices slash procedures, whichever word you want to use there. And because there's legal ramifications just for that word. So that's why I keep, you know, doing the P split there. But NAP, the update is NARPM has approved it. The subcommittee has approved it. The finance committee has approved it. And the check has been cut to the vendor, the initial draw, to get them rolling into creating the standard for us. Now, I'd touch on that just because it's going to tie right back into the acquisition side. Mm-hmm. And this is the challenges that we were talking about earlier, is when the NAP standard is come to fruition, people can go optionally onto that standard. And of course, I want to do it. You're probably going to do it, I think, is basically commit your recommit your books to that direction. And in that direction, what you're going to find is now we're speaking the same language. Mm-hmm. Okay, you're not speaking French Canadian and I'm speaking English. We're both going to be speaking in a universal language of numbers. And so, as we were mentioning in the conversation prior to the show, line 101 for my books is going to mean the same as line 101 in your books. Mm-hmm. Now, making a point, getting past the babble, all the acquisitions that you've done, how much different would they have been had they been on a NARPM standard of accounting?
A million times different and a million times better, because if there is the one part of my business that I am the weakest at, it's the accounting, because I'm dyscalculic. Numerical patterns don't make sense for me. It's like being dyslexic, but with numbers. And so I have an amazing accounting manager who takes care of all of that. I know enough, obviously, to run a business for 12 years, but to have something that's laid out and it's like, everything that she would have had, I would have been able to see from everything I had if it matched up. That would have been amazing, because I guarantee you, had I been able to see it like that, I would have seen much quicker what the discrepancies were and been able to handle it before I signed that, you know, those papers and had to deal with it after the fact. I also think that, especially for new companies coming on, when, you know, you're not really sure, you're going to code everything wrong. You're just going to, because you don't know. It's different. It's different from us than it is for anything else. So if there was a piece of paper or a manual that said, okay, when you're setting up your company, you code painting as this, you code late fees like this, you code, you know, office, you know, miscellaneous as this, how much easier would that be for these companies that are starting up to be able to have success from the beginning? You know, I think it's a great idea.
Yeah, it's a big point. And so the NARPM committee and the board have been very responsive on this. So I'm excited to see that kick off. So the update again is the vendor has it in their hands. They're starting to produce it. They're going to produce a standard GL account. They're going to produce the GL codes and all that stuff, the list. And then the definitions are going to go into that. And out of that will actually become the metrics, like the standardized metrics that you and I can compare to say, you know, what is your labor efficiency ratio? Mm-hmm. Or what is your profit per door per month, you know, that type of thing. And so those are the metrics that would actually mean something. And if you're on the NARPM accounting standard, it's pretty clear that they're going to actually be correct. There's just so many examples. I'm very excited to see that. And that's the latest update. So switching gears a little bit, let's go back to kind of what your presentations have been on in the Texas markets, because I think you're an expert at that stuff. So I wanted to give you an opportunity to just chat about it and we talk back and forth. Mm-hmm. So we talked about some things with tenant screening, even communication. So talk to us. Let's go down the path of tenant screening, because I think that's pretty fascinating and it's ever changing. Mm-hmm. And I want to go there because there's always new technology that's popping up, like Facebook Live. We can talk about some of there. Mm-hmm. But the tenant screening process is always getting better, because think of what we did 10 years ago. Right. I mean, it was rudimentary, basic. You probably had paper applications 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. You probably had no forms. You probably took personal checks. I mean, it was really rough back then. Now it's all online. Mm-hmm. And so talk us through what you feel and what your opinion on tenant screening has been.
Well, one of the things that has definitely made us look at tenant screening differently are federal laws that have been passed, like disparate impact. I know in a lot of states now, You have protected classes, you know, new protected classes, like source of income has been, you know, been a protected class in, you know, the city of Seattle and the city of Tacoma. And there's some states that have source of income as a protected class as well. And so it's kind of made us rethink our, back in the day, you could be kind of very black and white about who could rent from you and who couldn't. You could say no felonies. You know, nobody with a felony need apply. You could be very direct with, you know, nobody with an eviction, or, you know, you have to have a credit score that's above X amount or all of this. What the changes in, you know, in our federal and our state laws is kind of making us do, and something that we in my office at least have always done, is we've always done a case by case on everybody, because I believe that unless you have a conversation with somebody, you don't know what their story is. And their story might be something that's not necessarily going to make them a bad tenant. It could make them an excellent tenant. But you're never going to know that if all you're doing is looking at somebody on paper.
Can you give us some examples?
Yeah, actually, I can give you a great example. So I had a one of my property managers called the office one day and said, somebody's coming in to put a hold on X property. I said, okay, am I going to know who they are? They're like, oh yeah, you'll know. I said, okay. So this gentleman walks in to the office and he is literally covered in tattoos, head to toe. Okay. Very nice. Very, you know, we meet. He's like, I want to put a hold down on this property. I said, okay. And I explain our application requirements and all that. He applies for the house. I look at, you know, his report when I got it. Everything was fine. I call him and tell him he's been approved. And he's like, really? I said, yeah, why? He's like, because I applied to four other companies and they all denied me. I said, really? Now, they're looking at the same report I am. Mm-hmm. You know, he makes enough money. He owned a house before. His credit isn't amazing, but it's not awful, you know? So why would they deny him? Because of how he looked, because he's covered in tattoos.
Oh, wow.
Because there's no reason. Like, there was nothing at all in his credit report, in any of his background, that would have caused anybody with normal criteria to mm-hmm. deny him. So I rented to him, and I rented to him for years, 4 to 6 years. I came to find out after the fact, after I had rented to him and signed his lease, that he was actually famous. He had his own TV show. If you ever followed like tattoo shows, mm-hmm. you know, he had a show on A&E. He was on the first season of LA Inc. And he happened to move into my area up in Washington, and he rented for me for years. And we became really good friends. And every piece of beautiful art that I now have on my body, he has done, you know, because I gave him an opportunity and I gave mm-hmm. him a chance, and he was a great tenant.
So why would he have not been automatically approved just from other management companies? Were they looking at the guy and saying, we don't like you?
I think that, you know, it's the same reason why I've heard property managers in NARPM classes stand up and say, well, I already know if somebody walks up to a house and, you know, they have a dirty car, that they're not going to be good tenants.
Yeah, that baffles me.
Hey, everyone. This is Allison DeSaro with Seacoast Commerce Bank. You may have heard about us, or you may have even heard my podcast episode with Brad Larson, where we discuss the benefits of banking with property management bank like Seacoast Commerce Bank. We specialize in providing the ideal banking partnership for not only your business, but specifically your trust accounts. In addition, we offer a significant analysis program, which allows us to not only offset your bank fees, but then also offset property management related invoices. You can visit us at our website, or you can call me directly at 619-988-6708.
This is Brad Larson, and I endorse this message.
You know, there was a comment on our Facebook page a week or two ago, and a person said that they approve applicants based on intuition.
Mm, yeah.
And I'm trying to neutralize it. It's not male or female person. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying a person about intuition. And I actually chastised that person on Facebook and said that's really the wrong way to go, because that's why I ask. I mean, how can that person not be approved on paper? You know, the way we do applications is we take the best approved, the best qualified. Mm-hmm. And so we can debate on that if you want. That's fine. First in the door, best qualified. It's all kind of the same concept. Mm-hmm. As long as you hold true to your screening criteria, mm-hmm. I think it's a fair deal wherever you go. And that's why it baffles me to hear that story, because had that person applied through us, we would have looked at him, that person on paper. Mm-hmm. Now, okay, he's got good credit, good income. He's, you know, had a home before. Okay, you're approved. And if he walks in the door and he looks like Mr. Tattoo, that's fine. That mm-hmm. doesn't really matter.
I don't even
to us.
See the people that apply.
Yeah.
Somebody else does the showings and I look at their report, and then I'm the one who makes a determination. You know, do I need to make a phone call? You know, if there's something on there that I need to talk about, then I'll make a phone call. one other thing too that we always try to do in our office is we try to be the educators, even for our tenants. Nobody wants to rent to somebody who doesn't have rental history. Well, how are they going to get any rental history if nobody's going to let them rent anywhere? It's like when my daughter, who's turning 19, was trying to find a job, but nobody wanted to hire her because she didn't have any experience.
Yeah,
so I had to hire her.
Catch 22, right.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And give her some experience. It's the same with renting. Why not be that first landlord for some kid that's coming out of college and has been living with mom and dad and wants their first place? Be that first landlord. Train them. Teach them how to be good tenants. Teach them from the start so that if they move out of my house, my rental, and move into yours, you don't have to deal with bad tenancy later down the road because I already trained them to be good tenants.
Is the market that competitive where you are to where you're getting 8, 10, 12 applications in for a single unit? Or
We're not. We'll get a few. We'll probably get 2 or 3.
Okay.
And, you know, you sometimes have to, you know, sift, you know, the best one out of the three, you know.
Correct.
Usually one's not going to be good at all. I don't know. That's just how it always works out. And so it's usually two that we're picking out of. But I won't automatically say no to somebody who doesn't have rental history. Just like I never automatically said no to people with felonies. Mm-hmm. People have done their time. You know
that's
what I
right.
mean?
And now that's illegal to say that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But people still want to.
Correct. And I don't agree with that because as you know, like marijuana is a great example.
Mm-hmm.
How many states have now legalized? I think 9 have legalized recreational use. So now you're starting to crack down on a drug that's basically could be like alcohol in 10, 20 years to where it's legal. They tax the crap out of it and now it's everywhere. So it might be a situation to where you can't discriminate on that or it's just not fair. So somebody had a felony charge for marijuana from 10 years ago. It's like, who cares? You know, that's nothing.
Yeah.
You know, if they're beating the heck out of cops in prison, sure. And they have, you know, if they're a violent offender, I can see that. But back to my screening criteria point is I'm baffled to hear that story because with the gentleman that applied and who accepted, that would not have happened with most well-run companies. That person would have applied, would have been, it's like a check the box. You meet the screening criteria. You're this, you're that, you're other. Send us your security deposit and we're going to get you in. We'll sign your lease agreement and you can move in. It's not an interview process.
No, I know.
We don't drag these people in and say, well, let me see. Let me roll up your sleeves. Let me see. Oh, you have a tattoo. You're a bad person.
Mm-hmm. And that's what I was baffled because when he first started renting from me, I didn't have any tattoos. So it wasn't like it was like a kindred spirit type thing at all. It was just fine. You have tattoos. You know, you're fine. You make all the points that I need you to make for you to qualify for one of my rentals. Why wouldn't I rent to you?
And that's the key point we got to hammer in this conversation is you set the screening criteria and you live by it.
Mm-hmm.
It should not be an interview process where you like the person. That's my point is people, if you say, well, if I like the tenant, like I use my intuition and they feel like they're going to be good tenants and we do a seance together and they feel like they're going to be good. That's not the way to do it. They meet the criteria, you go. That's how you last through a fair housing complaint. And I say all that because we've done it. We've been under a fair housing complaint and our processes have been vindicated from top to bottom because we use the best applicant type of a scenario. It's all posted in our screening criteria. It's all labeled on our website. Everybody knows about it when they apply. So going deeper into the tenant screening, what kind of a platform do you use right now to get all your tenant screening done? What kind of a software product?
Oh, we use, it's a company out of Tacoma. So I'm Washington based, called Landlord Solutions.
Landlord Solutions. Yeah. Okay.
So we use them and they do the complete everything, the background, the eviction search. They do the criminal, the credit, the employment. They do it all.
So they call, physically call for you.
Yep.
Okay. Cause that's also where it gets a little deeper because, you know, they're going to use a reference of, you know, one Joe Bob, the handyman is the reference. And well, Joe Bob is the brother of the applicant, but the brother has a different name. So it's just, it gets a little difficult. And calling is going to be key to that point. Do you even dig into the tax records and verify Joe Bob owned the property that, you see where I'm going? It can get seriously deep.
Oh yeah.
And do you Facebook stalk them?
Sometimes.
It makes a difference because I think any good property management company owner or like a landlord solution place should check on social media because they're going to catch things.
Well, my whole thing, and usually the reason why I'll go on Facebook is I'll look at their pet, you know, whatever pet they've listed, and I'll go check their Facebook because the number one thing that people love to post pictures of is their pets. So if you've put in an application that you have, you know, a schnauzer, but your whole Facebook is full of pictures of you and your Akita, you know, it's kind of gives me a jumping off point to be able to have a conversation with, you know, is this the only pet you have? Mm-hmm. Are you sure? You know, something like that. Because it's better for me to know ahead of time. It's better for them to know ahead of time that they're not going to be able to rent from me with that, you know, whatever aggressive breed dog.
Let's talk about a couple things on tenant screening. So we'll get down to pets here in a little bit. Mm-hmm. But one thing that people can get tripped up on. So let's talk about stuff that you can, like, are pitfalls. Mm-hmm. And one is the letter of declination. So if you decline somebody, mm-hmm. you have to send them written notice. Mm-hmm. And what we've been doing, and you can tell me if this is right, wrong, or other, or just we'll just share best practices and call it good. But what we've been doing is we actually put that letter of declination that we fill out through Rent Screener, was our landlord. That's like our landlord solutions. Then we do everything in-house because mm-hmm. I have the staff. But if we send somebody a letter of declaration, did I say that right? Letter of declination, excuse me, a letter of decline, that we send it via DocuSign.
Okay.
And so we put it into a DocuSign form, mm-hmm. we send it to the denied applicant, mm-hmm. and as soon as they open it, it date time stamps that form.
Okay.
And so that's why we do that, because just because they're, they don't have to sign it, you just have to receive it. And so that shows proof of receipt.
Okay.
So we found that to be one of the best techniques. Now, of course, you can send out a letter, but who knows if that's going to get to them. Mm-hmm. You can send out an email to their last correspondence, but who knows if they ever got it, mm-hmm. and then they're going to lie about getting it anyway. Mm-hmm. But I always see that as the giant, like, catch-all for, oh, gotcha. You didn't send out the correct letter that you had to send out.
It's always a technicality.
Here's your lawsuit.
Always.
Yeah. They're always going to say something to the, mm-hmm. the counter effect. What are your best practices there?
Well, Washington State requires us to send out an adverse action letter.
Adverse action letter. Thank you.
And so, and for us, all we have to do is prove that we sent it, not that they received it.
Okay. So how do you do that?
Normally what we do, and it's old school, and I actually really like your DocuSign idea, is so we have a file, like a cloud-based file that basically is declined applicants. And whenever we send out an adverse action letter, we the data is on it. We scan it and we put it in a file with their name on it, mm-hmm. basically saying that that was the date that it was mailed out. And, you know, it hasn't bit us yet. Could it? Of course it could. I think I might try that DocuSign idea.
Yeah, that's a pretty neat idea. We came up with a while back, because what we were finding is the tenants weren't signing it. Mm-hmm. And we're like, well, that's fine. Don't sign it. We don't care, mm-hmm. because as soon as you open it, mm-hmm. it date time stamps that puppy.
Yeah, they don't have to sign it for us.
Correct.
We also, I don't know if it's the same here, but we also have to send them out if they're approved conditionally. Mm-hmm. So if they're approved, like, with a double deposit or with anything other than just straight what you would normally, do.
Correct.
We have to send that out as well.
Yeah, it's kind of like the twofold. It's an adverse action letter, but mm-hmm. like with different terms.
Exactly.
So we denied you for your original application. However, we'll offer you different terms, like a double deposit,
exactly.
or whatever terms you want to deviate from your normal advertised terms. And that's mm-hmm. pretty standard stuff. So let's talk about pets. This is a fun one. Mm-hmm. And so some of the challenges that we've been having is we've had to deny certain breeds of pets, certain breeds of dogs potentially, mm-hmm. that are on the endangered breed list. Not that, mm-hmm. that's a bad term. It's the dangerous breed list, mm-hmm. is what I meant to say, from the homeowner's insurance.
Right.
Okay. Yep. You've heard me talk about this on the show before, is that's one of the challenges that we're still working through, is how to get around that with either some sort of insurance policy or some sort of better practice, because we hate denying the applicants that are great on credit, great income, great situation, and they have a one-year-old German Shepherd. Mm-hmm. Oh my God, that's the worst dog in the world. However, it's on the dangerous breed list for the homeowner's insurance. Mm-hmm. So we have to deny it because that's our screening criteria. So it really sucks. What are your best practices on that? Have you been able to work around those challenges?
Well, I mean, at the end of the day, I talked about this today in my class, I've actually sat on the phone for hours with the ADA fighting with them over, we had a property that the applicant had a service animal that was a pit bull. And the owners called their insurance company to let them know that, this, because of course their policy had an addendum that was a restricted breed addendum that basically said that you can't have any of these 14 dogs mm-hmm. on your property. And their insurance company said, well, then we're going to have to cancel your policy.
That sucks, doesn't it?
And Man. So I called the ADA and I was like, how can you justify that when it's out of the owner's hands? It's now the insurance companies that are, that's who's making this rule. Well, but it's not a financial burden for the owner to change insurance companies. So they should be able to just go to another company that doesn't have a breed restriction.
Yeah, let's explain the line in the sand there, because ADA kind of limits itself to the point where if it causes a financial burden mm-hmm. on an owner, they're supposed to be, air quotes, supposed to be allowed to say no.
Right.
But the ADA says, go pound sand and find another insurance company.
Right.
Which may not be that easy.
Well, and also, if you're like most people, you've got your car insurance bundled in with your house and your business and maybe a boat or, an RV or something in there. And you've been with a company for 5-10 years. So you've, got a little bit of clout with them. So
like USAA, you're a big area exactly. up there. Yeah. We are too.
And I have USAA car insurance, mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, if I was to take my car insurance and move it over to State Farm, they're going to charge me more. That is a financial burden. But the ADA, no matter how hard I tried to explain that, refused to understand. So my owner basically took his house off the market and left it vacant.
Wow. So we're still fighting through that challenge. We're talking about doing like a master policy, a landlord master policy, to give the owners like that an option to buy into our master policy to become the additionally insured underneath us. Mm-hmm. So we're still working through that concept because then they're going to have liability insurance at a flat rate.
Right.
And so we can rent to whomever we want to rent to, breeds included, with our own screening criteria. We're the filter. Mm-hmm. That's what insurance companies are looking for, is a smart filter. Mm-hmm. They just don't want to open it up to anybody putting in pets in there, lions, animals, tigers, whatever. Mm-hmm. But if you had a management company that says, okay, we're going to do the proper screening and only put in what deems appropriate, mm-hmm. That would kind of be the filter they're looking for. So we're still fighting through that challenge. So beating that up pretty good. Let's talk about a couple different things. You mentioned move outs, mm-hmm. and this is a neat technique. I want to bring it up. So you're doing move outs on Facebook Live.
Right. When they're really bad.
When they're really bad.
Yeah.
And you've gotten a lot of traction doing that.
I do. And it's funny. A lot of times what I'll do it. So I don't think anybody but a property manager understands what we do. And the things that we see and the levels of the low levels that people descend to that we can see, because we're in their homes and we're in their homes sometimes at the worst time of their life, mm-hmm. when they've been evicted or, when they've had to abandon a house or anything like that. So when the move outs are really bad, I'll Facebook Live them and just show people, this is what I do.
Yeah.
This is what I do on a daily basis. And I actually started because I had an owner who had hired me. He had managed his house himself. Everybody has this story. Has managed his house himself. The tenants had destroyed it, had stopped paying rent. He's on the East Coast. They're over here. They wouldn't answer the phone. They're not communicating and he wants them out. But he doesn't have anybody here that's boots on the ground to facilitate that. So he hired me. And I wanted to show him because I went and saw the house and I was like, oh my God, like it was awful. Mm. They took the floor.
Wow.
Like they took the tiles off the floor. And I was trying to figure out a way that he would be able to see it, because pictures are, like they're stills. You can't really do that. And then I was like, I wasn't super tech savvy to be able to like take a video and then edit it and then send it to him though. But I was like, hey, why don't we become Facebook friends right quick? And I'll Facebook Live. I say other people are going to see it as well. He's like, that's okay, whatever. So that's what I did. So I became friends with him right quickly on Facebook and then Facebook Live the inside of this house. And there's comments and people and like, oh my God, I can't believe that happened. If you need somebody to come haul away, this stuff, I'll do that. I can't believe somebody would do that to a service member. And there's like 200 people commenting on this video. And I was like, huh. Okay. So I started doing it more. And people get really emotionally invested. Like I had a house I was telling you earlier where they left a cat behind. Mm-hmm. And weeks later, I have people emailing me or messaging me. They're like, what happened to the cat? We need an update on the cat. What's going on with the cat? Huh. So, the cat went to one of my maintenance people. So the cat is fine. But people get emotionally invested because you're literally showing them, this is what I deal with. Like, this is the true side of being a landlord, not what everybody in the media wants to think, that we're just sitting there, making it rain with the millions of dollars that we're making off people's backs and off of tenant fees. This is what I'm doing on a weekly basis, is I'm walking in somebody's house that has left it looking like this. You know what the number one comment I get is, though? Why are you wearing flip-flops?
Oh, sure. So, to go deep on that, so is there any privacy concerns that we should be looking at with that?
And somebody asked me that. And I was like, I'm not posting an address.
True.
I'm never taking anything on the outside. So literally, I start this when I'm on the inside of the house. So nobody even sees a street or a street marker or anything. There's never anything with an address or a name or, you know, I'm not zooming in on mail or anything like that. I'm literally just panning the house, mm-hmm. wondering if something is poop on the walls or, you know, or dirt.
Well, let's go to the other side of that. So what if you started it in front of the home? We're at 123 Maple and Mr. and Mrs. John Smith just moved out and you tag them on Facebook inside of there and you do that walkthrough, the public shaming.
Oh, and I mean,
I'm not saying I'm going to do this. I'm not a recommendation. I'm just throwing it out there for fun conversation, just to kind of see what your reaction would be to that.
Well, I think we've all wanted to publicly shame that tenant that, you know, hasn't paid their rent, especially the ones who want to leave us the 1-star review on Yelp. I don't know how many times I wanted to be like, really? Maybe you should have paid your rent. You know, maybe you shouldn't have left your cat behind, mm-hmm. you know, something like that. But as a professional, you know, I really truly believe what goes around comes around.
Sure.
You know what I mean? So at some point in their life, you know, whatever they've done is going to come back to them without any help from me. And I can be more professional with what I need to say. And I have actually rebutted, you know, bad reviews with facts mm-hmm. and pictures mm-hmm. And, you know, was able to that way kind of, you know, prove my point and make them look, you know, less valid.
Yeah.
But I don't know that necessarily being like, so we're at the trashed house of, you know, Mr. and Mrs. blah, blah, blah. I don't know that that's because everybody knows everybody on Facebook. It's going to get back to them.
That's the kind of the point. And I don't know if I like that idea or not. It's just throwing it out there for fun.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
You know,
no.
We're not going to suddenly switch up processes and do all of our move outs from Facebook Live. Because think of that. You're doing 300, 400 lease agreements a year. Yeah. It'd just be overwhelming. No one would give a darn about that page then.
No. People really just want to see the bad ones.
Yeah.
They don't care.
It's almost
about
like
the ones
you should create a separate page.
Mm-hmm.
Like Rent Works bad move outs.
Oh yeah.
You know, or Christina's mm-hmm. bad move outs.
Yeah.
And just once in a while start posting the horror stories and just mm-hmm. kind of see that's might be an interesting marketing ploy just to let people know we see some awful stuff. We do.
Yeah. I mean, oh yeah. Be like, you know, a day in the life of a property manager.
Yeah. And there's always the 1 out of 10 that, you know, I would not say we get a lot of trashed homes, but you know, you walk through them and like, they did this much damage in just a couple of years. What's wrong with these people?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We don't get a ton of them, but like the other day I had to break in a house through a window. To try to get inside to see if people had left yet, mm-hmm. you know, because they changed the locks and they took the actual handle off the sliding glass door.
Wow. Who does that?
Right. Who does that? I don't know. They did.
That's odd.
Yeah.
So okay. Real quick on the state specific stuff.
Mm-hmm.
What has life been like in Washington since the legalization of marijuana?
You know, I mean, personally or professionally, like personally, I have friends who have MS, who have cancer, who have, you know, all fibromyalgia. They have all kinds of things that now that it's legal and there's, you know, less of a stigma about having it, they're getting better. Their quality of life is better, all of that. So, you know, I will always be an advocate for legalizing marijuana, especially for, you know, for medical reasons. In terms of rentals, you can't smoke anything in my properties, period.
Yeah.
It's in the lease.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You want to do marijuana? That's cool. Buy some edibles.
Buy some brownies, I guess, right?
Exactly. And that's what I tell people. They're like, well, but it's legal. I'm like, it's not legal to smoke anything inside the house. I don't care if you're smoking celery. Like, you can't smoke anything inside the house. You know, it stains the walls. You get THC in the carpets. You can never get it out. It's like a greasy grime. It's gross. You know, I said, you can't.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how we figured it out in our house or in our business is you just can't smoke anything inside the house.
And do people object to that or are you just going to explain it different to them?
I just tell them you can't smoke cigarettes inside either.
Yeah.
And they're like, legal.
And they kind of like, oh, the light bulb was off.
Yeah.
Oh,
and they're
oh, yeah, dude, I guess you're right, man. Yeah.
And then if they really want to fight it, I'm like, well, you know, technically it's still against federal law. So if you really want to fight me... You know, but we don't usually get a lot of pushback.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people get it. And
they're so mellow. Why? Right. They're all
and they can go
smoke
it. And they can go smoke it in their backyard. You know what I mean?
Sure.
If they really want to.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So other than that, I mean, there's so many other things that I would rather, you know, spend my time fighting with tenants about.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
I only bring it up because, you know, it's a wave that's coming.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Texas will be one of the last holdouts because it's super conservative here. However, mm-hmm. it might be more of a federal mandate than a state mandate
mm-hmm.
eventually. I could see that being legalized at a federal level before the state of Texas legalizes it.
I don't know. You guys have Austin.
True.
Yeah. Austin might win it for the state. I'm just saying.
It's the one blue marble in a state of red marbles. No, true. Right? So it's imagine that. It's an interesting dynamic for sure. I just thought I'd bring it up for fun. Well, this has been pretty good. We've been talking now for over 40 plus minutes. Wow. Do you have anything that you want to touch on, you know, the stuff we talked about pre-show?
No, I don't really think so. Okay. Like I said, I'm doing that class at National about how to poorly buy a property management company, which is always fun.
I think that'll be very interesting. I think that'd be a must see for people because the lessons learned is how we get better. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't want to make the same mistake that somebody else made. And so that's part of the reason why we do this podcast show is, you know, I'll air some dirty laundry out there and we'll try to make some things that, okay, we screwed up here, don't screw up here. And then mm-hmm. they try to give them some advice. And that's how people learn. I'd like that presentation. I think that's quite a bit. So you're on the way to Houston tomorrow.
Yeah, I'm in Houston tomorrow. And then I'm doing Dallas and Fort Worth next week. And all my classes literally have come forth from my mistakes. Like when I first started, if I can take just a quick minute, I was on the committee for the first broker owner. Mm-hmm. And we were trying to figure out content. What do people want to see? What kind of breakouts should we have? And a lot of discussion was going on then about how to properly sell your property management company, like how to set it up and, you know, what to look for and how to evaluate it. And we're like, okay, let's have that. Well, who could we have that has done this and done it successfully? Well, at the time it was Susan Albert. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, hey, why don't we have Susan come? Because she's super smart and did it in a way that made a lot of sense. And she can, you know, she can talk about that. And I was joking when I said, and if you want like the flip side of how to poorly buy one, I will totally be that fall guy. I was totally kidding. And they put me on the program. And so here I am at Owner Broker, and Susan has all these wonderful slides and a PowerPoint and all these metrics and like spreadsheets. I have nothing. There's five past presidents in the room. And I'm just like, okay. And I just start talking about all the mistakes I made. And so I did this, so don't do this. And you know, when you're doing this, don't do this, because I did that. And that's all I talked about for my whole time. And everybody loved it. And everybody came up to me and they're like, you know, it's really important to be able to admit your mistakes, but a lot of people are embarrassed to do it, or they're ashamed, or you don't want to feel stupid. And I don't obviously care if anybody thinks I'm stupid, because I will talk about my mistakes all the time because I don't want anybody else to make the same ones that I did. So if I can tell you, hey, Brad, I did this during my last acquisition, make sure you don't do that if you're trying to buy anything so that you don't have to go through it. I've done my job.
On the acquisition side, there's a really good podcast show out there called Built to Sell, and that's with John Warlow. And he's probably on episode 100 now, but I've listened to most of those episodes, and it's all about businesses, large and small, being acquired or selling or buying or whatever. And a lot of those lessons learned are coming out of that. And so that's really neat to hear. Yes. If you're truly interested in the acquisition game, get into that podcast, listen to it, Built to Sell. Built to Sell. Okay. But this is a great one. I definitely think people are going to be very interested to see your presentation on that, because it's the little things that we forget that you assume, oh, I'll be fine. I'll just do my due diligence and everything will be fine. It's the little things that will bite you. Mm-hmm. And so you can't even go to somebody and say, I want to acquire this company. Please help me. Because attorneys, unless they, you know, some merger and acquisitions attorneys, and they do it daily, they're not going to really know enough to really protect you. Because the little things, the inner workings of a management company are more intrinsic, more intricate than the big stuff of just writing a purchase agreement for the whole thing.
Right.
There's so many little ins and outs of it below the purchase agreement that are tough to find.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So outstanding, Christina. This has been a great conversation. Loved having you on the show. You were nervous about doing a podcast. I said, look, it's just a conversation here.
Yeah, no, it was great.
Yeah, you did great. So appreciate you coming on, and we'll definitely see you at the next conference. So thanks again.
Thank you.
All right, take care.
All right.
This episode of the Property Management Mastermind Show is sponsored by Mark Cunningham of Grace Property Management. Now, Mark has created some amazing products for property management companies. We have implemented his systems and his business income streams into our business here, and I can personally recommend them. If you're in the property management business, I encourage you to visit their website, as you'll definitely find a product that will improve your business. I know Mark personally, and just a small investment to pick up one of his golden nuggets could earn you a return many times over. To learn more, go to propertymanagementsystem.org, again, propertymanagementsystem.org, and to get a 10% discount on all of Mark's products, use the promo code BRAD, B-R-A-D.
This has been a podcast episode by propertymanagementproductions.com. Be sure to subscribe to our podcast, leave us feedback, and come back for our next episode.